David Robson's been writing about making decisions in life and what you can do to make them and not regret them. We speak to David Robson regularly on Sunday morning. He's a neuroscience writer and author of The Intelligence Trap, about how individuals and organizations can improve their decision making, and The Seven Primes of Life, why each decade comes with its own superpowers, the expectation effect as well, how your mindset can transform your life. And he's won some major awards for his science journalism in outlets like The Guardian, The Atlantic, and in this case, New Scientist. David, thanks for joining us again. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks so much for having me back on.
It's a pleasure. How neuroscience can help you make tough decisions with no regrets. And this sounds like a tall order, doesn't it? I mean, we've all been in this position in life, I think, and will be again, many of us. And to quote you, should I stay put or move house? Should I stay in my job or start my own business? Should I put up with an unsatisfying relationship or try my luck and love at another time? Now, first question, David, if you don't mind, why is this like blackjack, or for those of us who don't play blackjack in casinos, like pontoon?
Right. It's, you know, it seems like a strange comparison to start with, because one is a pure game of chance. I guess for listeners who haven't played it, you know, you're kind of initially dealt two cards, you add up the total, and your aim is to be as close to 21 as possible without going over. Now, you can add to your total by asking to twist to take another card from the pack, which you can then add to your total. But if you exceed 21, then you're out of the game. So, you know, we have those two decisions. It's a binary decision. It's either you stick with what you have or you twist. You take a gamble that may pay off, or it may be much worse than your current situation. Now, it turns out that actually loads of the decisions that you mentioned, those really important choices in life, turn out to be stick or twist decisions. You know, do you leave your job? You can't guarantee that whatever you move on to will make you happier. And so I was really interested in how the human mind deals with those kinds of choices. We do stick more often than we really should do.
As you say, analysis paralysis often results, and I'm sure we all know about that. But then again, some people roll the dice disastrously. That's why we get paralyzed, isn't it?
Right, exactly. I think the fear of the losses that we might make, they loom really large in our minds. And so that causes us to stick in this analysis paralysis. And we, you know, we're often irrationally conservative in that way, because even when things really aren't working out for us, we just stick in the same position rather than taking that leap into the unknown.
How much of this do you think is to do with whether we have inherited boldness genes? I mean, can what we're about to discuss apply to the more timid people in life as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what I found really interesting when I was researching this piece is that stick or twist decisions are prevalent throughout the animal kingdom. And what we find in the animal kingdom is that animals do have personality. So it was studied in albatrosses, for example, that you find that you have some bolder individuals and some shyer individuals. The bolder individuals are more likely to investigate, say, an unfamiliar object within their little patch of land. And that boldness then translates into greater daring to kind of take flight and often to travel hundreds of miles to find a new patch of sea where they can, you know, try to find like a bountiful range of fish to feed on and to use for their breeding. So, you know, yeah, we see it across the animal kingdom that we do have boldness genes. Some people are naturally a little bit more daring and impulsive than other people, but everyone can benefit from knowing a bit more about the psychology behind these decisions and having a bit more self-awareness about their own tendencies when making these choices.
And a little bit more about the psychology. The loss aversion bias is relevant here, isn't it? I wonder if you could remind us of what that is.
It is. In general, on average, across the human population, you find that most people are kind of aversive to loss. Like I said, the losses really loom large in our minds. And this can be quite irrational. So it's not just, you know, about whether you whether you're gonna kind of gamble your whole house and all your savings on a game of blackjack in the casino is actually, even when you could make a very intelligent decision, most people still don't like to make that gamble at all. And this is studied in laboratory experiments where you ask people to imagine that they're kind of making some kind of business investment, and they might be given, say, $100 that they can either keep or they can invest in a company that has a 50% chance of succeeding, in which case they would make another $150, or it might fail and they'll lose everything. Now, when you weigh up the probabilities and you look for the expected amount of money that you could make on that kind of decision, if you were to repeat it again and again, it actually makes logical sense to make that choice. You can't guarantee that you'll win on each individual decision, but you know that in the long run, if you take that kind of decision time after time after time, you're going to start making a good profit. But what we find is that most people, because of this loss aversion, they don't want to lose what they've already been given. They would rather stick with what they have. They don't make that gamble. And over, years or a lifetime, that means you're missing out on a lot of really good opportunities. And that's relevant in business, as this example illustrates, but it really could apply to any life decision.
And the sunk cost fallacy, which many of us have probably heard of and then promptly forgotten, not all of us who have better memories, but the sunk cost fallacy can also have a powerful effect on us.
Right, exactly. And again, this is kind of related to our fear of losses. And the sunk cost fallacy essentially describes those situations where you've put in a lot of time and money and resources into a project. And then it starts to fail. And you know that it's really going to continue to fail. So you're going to lose everything that you've invested and any future investments as well. But we really hate giving up on what we've already invested. So we really try hard to kind of to keep it going. We don't want to cut our losses. So we just end up pouring in good money after bad.
As you put it, when we don't want to move on and when we don't want to take a chance, this kind of psychological inertia actually has a lasting impact on our happiness, I think.
It does. And there was this really beautiful experiment by Stephen Levitt, a psychologist in the US. He's also the author of the famous Freakonomics books. He set up this kind of online, I guess you could call it a game. It was a website where you kind of listed one of the big dilemmas in your life, the things we've been discussing, like whether to move house, whether to get married, whether to adopt, whether to, split up with our partners, whether to quit our jobs, all of these things. And the visitors to the website, listed their decision, and then they could flip a coin, and the coin would tell them whether they should kind of take that leap or to continue with the status quo. A substantial number of people did take notice of it. So he found that, they were more likely than chance to actually go ahead with what the coin advised. And what he found was that actually, when people did make that big decision, when they actually did take the leap, they were much happier in the following 6 months to a year than the people who just stuck with the status quo. So that's quite a powerful demonstration of the fact that these biases, like the sunk cost bias or loss aversion, they're actually influencing our real world behavior, and they're reducing our happiness as a result. Now, that doesn't mean that we should always, change our whole lives on every whim that we have. But in these situations where these people have been really contemplating those decisions for a long time and just hadn't quite been brave enough to make the move, it really did seem to pay off for most of the participants.
Okay, so I flip a coin and I get heads and I decide to follow what heads is and it doesn't quite work out, maybe. I wonder, David, if there's still a kind of pride and pleasure in taking the gamble on a life outcome, maybe even if on the surface of things we lose, at least you've done it.
Yeah, I think that's also, I don't think this experiment exactly, tracked whether things had turned out precisely as these participants had imagined. But I think some kind of movement and momentum was probably what contributed to their happiness. So even if there were unexpected consequences of their decision, I think it made them happier than if they had just been stuck in that rut and had that kind of inertia where they just weren't moving at all.
Yeah. And this apparently doesn't work at all for the less consequential decisions we make. Flipping a coin does not work for them.
Right, getting a tattoo, something that's not necessarily life-changing. If you did or didn't get a tattoo, it just didn't seem to actually make people much happier either way. So it's really those big dilemmas where we're overly conservative.
Tell us about maximizers, the individuals with a propensity to find the best outcomes in situations. I think you've got a good example about students looking for jobs, but can you explain this area and the advantages of maximizing for us?
Yeah, so I mean, maximizing it's a kind of a double-edged sword. Just to give a definition, a maximizer is someone who is always really conscientiously looking to make the best decision. So they're really trying to consider every possible option before coming to a conclusion and making that choice. Now, there are some advantages to that. So they do tend to be less susceptible to certain cognitive biases. So they're less susceptible to loss aversion because, once they weighed up all of the options quite laboriously, then they are, more likely to make the rational choice rather than just kind of letting their fears of the losses sway their decision and hold them back. But it also comes with a disadvantage, and that is that these people are never truly satisfied with any decision they do take because they always have that nagging feeling, almost a fear of missing out, that FOMO sensation. They're always worried that if they'd made another choice, it might have been even better. We want to allow ourselves to make the leap when we can, but we also need to make peace with the decisions that we do make rather than always looking our sho over our shoulder or wistfully thinking, what would have happened if I, had made another choice. We should avoid those what-if questions.
So people who play it safe can harbour forever regrets. We understand this. People who maximise, as you put it, in life, can also regret, as you say, they didn't consider even more choices. So the answer is presumably to toss the coin, and whatever happens, never regret.
Right, and that's I think that's easier said than done. Certainly, I struggle with that. But then, when you look at the psychology of decision making, there are some techniques that can help us to do just that. So, my favorite strategy is called psychological distancing, and the idea here is that what's often holding us back from making the right decisions, whether we're being too conservative or too impulsive, what's holding us back really is our emotions. We're too immersed in our emotions and either that kind of blind optimism or the kind of fear of loss that's holding us back. And with psychological distancing, we just try to take another person's perspective that kind of just mutes those emotions so they're not holding such power over our decisions. And the simple way to do that, there's lots of ways you can do it, but one simple way to do that is to just imagine that you're advising a friend in a similar dilemma. Or you can try to take a long view of the situation. So you could maybe imagine yourself in 10 years' time looking back on your current self and ask yourself, what would that person in the future think about this decision? What would they advise me to do? What you see when you do this is that actually people do make the more rational choices. They're kind of a bit more impulsive, but to the optimum degree. So they're not loss averse anymore, but they're not overly impulsive either. It's just giving them that bravery to maybe follow the toss of the coin and make that decision that they've been contemplating but have never quite been brave enough to carry through.
I wonder if that kind of distancing technique would include being a fly on your own wall you know, you're on the wall looking at yourself in a room, thinking, as you say, about what you would advise this person to do. I wonder if that would help as well.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, there's some really good research where the psychologists have asked people to do just that, to imagine that they're observing themselves from a third person perspective. So as if they were that fly watching the scene from above. And what you see is that that too can really help people to make better decisions in the moment.
And as regards the students looking for jobs, which is a germane discussion in our household, the maximizers, I think, were more successful, and they were more successful at also earning money. The trick was they had to stay happy with the jobs and not just, as you say, feel restless.
Yeah, I mean, that was the irony, was that the maximizers did manage to get better jobs once they'd graduated, but they also felt less happy with their decisions. You know, because they still worried that they could have done even better than they really did. Now, what I love about when you use strategies like psychological distancing is that by helping us to feel just a little bit more detached from our emotions, they can also help us to avoid those feelings of regret. So if you practice psychological distancing after you've made the decision to kind of, you know, talk your way through kind of what happened and, you know, almost perform this kind of post-mortem of the fallout, you're less likely to feel such keen regret over what you've experienced. It helps you to move on, to be constructive, and maybe to make that next life-changing decision.
David Robson, always very good to talk to you, and thank you for giving us your time.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.